Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and today we're broadcasting live from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair in Custer, Wisconsin. And great to have you with us today. I tell you, we look forward to the Energy Fair every single year. We've been doing it for a long, long time now. And I'm looking at the highlights of the things that are going on over the weekend. There's wonderful stuff going on. Lots of great workshops. There's music. There's great food. There's, oh boy, great pancake for peace breakfast this morning from the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice is one of the things. But you could come and see some of the greatest things that are going on these days in the energy area. Great to for us to be here, and certainly great for me to have my guest. My guest is Ken Schrader, who is an associate professor and Portage County Agricultural Agent for UW Extension. And obviously, he's with us to help you with your gardening needs. Maybe it's the vegetables. Maybe it's the flowers. Maybe it's the trees. Ken Schrader, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Glad to be here.
You've got answers for everything, haven't you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I may not have immediate answers, but I can find out and get back to you or something like that. You can send me an email, give me office a phone call. I'm not there today, obviously, but nonetheless, that's what we do.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's great to have you along. I want to remind our listeners, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. How did I forget that? 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. We'll look forward to those. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment right there. And to begin with, Ken, let's talk a little bit about Portage County. What's going on here for our gardeners in this part of the state?
Well, obviously, today, if you're in Portage County and you're looking out the window, it's kind of cloudy. We had a good bunch of showers come through earlier this morning. So, I mean, that's getting to be a hot topic these days. If you're on the heavier clay soils, you know, it's been wet. You've been having a hard time getting out there and actually getting the garden planted. The same with our farmers out there. We've got the heavier soils, again, west of the river and throughout the state. If you've got heavier soils, maybe you haven't gotten all your planting done. We have corn that's not planted. We have soybeans that aren't in the ground and may not get in the ground because of this persistent rain. Just the opposite of what we saw last year, where it was sunny, hot, and dry. This year, we got a lot of moisture and lack of sunshine in a lot of cases. It's cool and comfy out there today. I enjoy that, but the sunshine would be nice to go along with it.
Yeah, it surely would. Here we are, the first day of summer. Usually by this time, it's been warm in Wisconsin for a long time, and this spring cool and wet, as you were saying. So
exactly. So, but it looks like it's going to warm up, isn't it?
And probably be okay. And I want to just recognize we have some hardy folks who've come to watch the show today. Thank you so much for coming by. Tell you what, it rained really, really hard here this morning. And so we've got a lot of wet benches. I'm inside, but unfortunately our audience is outside. But they're here nevertheless. They may have a question. And Judith Sears-Poisson, my producer, will be more than happy to take their questions. You can post a question, though, by calling at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments, and we'd love to hear from you. In fact, we have callers online. Should we take a call, Ken? Let's do that.
Sure, let's go.
Can we go to Linda in Iron Belt? Linda, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question regarding hostas. I have four large hostas in a small front garden, and they're gorgeous. They're just beautiful right now. But they're overshadowing a foxglove and a balloon plant and some other ones that need more sun. I want to know, should I stake them and put something around them to pull them back a bit from these plants, or is it okay to go ahead and trim them, you know, trim some stalks off of it?
What do you think, Ken?
Well, Linda, I mean, you're not going to do any harm to them if you do trim some of the leaves off and trim it back just to make room for those other plants. And the other option is to consider dividing them, and I guess the only concern there is if you do that now, we do get into the drier and hotter part of summer, you will need to pay attention to make sure that you water them well, you know, but it's still okay to move them
they're
as long
actually,
as you pay attention.
They're so big, they'd be too hard to move right now, so springtime is the optimum time to split them, right?
Right.
Yeah, but they're really hardy.
They're hard to kill, truly. You maybe consider moving the other plants, but again, you know, as we get into the hotter and warmer weather, it's not ideal to transplant. But again, it's not impossible. It's as long as you go out there and check and see if they need some watering and some attention. You know, you could also provide some temporary shade to allow them to. Take hold. So,
Very good. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Before we go back to the phones, I did want to mention you work a lot with market growers and commercial vegetable producers, do you not? This part of the state is really big on vegetable production, if I'm not mistaken.
No, you are exactly right, Larry. Central Wisconsin on the sandy soils, we do a lot of commercial vegetable production, and just. Stats on Portage County alone. Portage County is the number one producer of sweet corn, snap beans, and potatoes in the state of Wisconsin.
Cool.
So I always like to kind of consider Portage County the heart of vegetable country in Wisconsin.
So vegetable questions are more than welcome as well. We have flower questions. We've had some insect questions. And Davey in Tinley Park, Illinois, what's on your mind? We got him there. We may or we may not have him.
Hello? Can you hear me, guys?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. Great show. I just want to say, I got some giant irises. You know, the plant is like 2 feet diameter. But I only get like 2 or 3 little flowers on the whole plant. Is there anything I could do to get it to make more flowers?
Oh, so you got lots of vegetation, but the flowers are low.
What have you been doing? What have you been doing for fertilization?
I just use regular, you know, fertilizer to preen or whatever my wife purchases. I Miracle-Gro or something like that.
Because when we have a shortage of flowers and overabundance of foliage, we need to think about the amount of nitrogen we're applying versus the other elements. If we're getting a little heavier on the nitrogen, you're going to have much more foliage production at the expense of flower production. The other thing is it becoming overgrown to the point where you may need to consider digging up and dividing?
Now that's maybe I need to do that.
Yeah, you may need to do that, Dave. And certainly you want a little higher phosphorus content, don't you, Ken? And a lot lower nitrogen content in your fertilizer. And
right. They
actually make advertise fertilizers that are flowering fertilizers or whatever. I forget what they call them.
Right. You can get fertilizers that are designed more towards flowering plants. Versus the vegetable side of things, so look for that, or at least pay attention to that that first number. You know, there are usually 3 numbers on that fertilizer bag, and the first one is nitrogen. Then there's phosphorus and potash or potassium. So that first number is the one you want to look at. That you don't want it to have it too large compared to the other numbers, because again, if you're pushing it pretty heavily, you get too much nitrogen.
All right. Thanks very much for that question, and let's take another call here. I think Jerry's up next in Turtle Lake. Jerry, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I have some delphiniums that I have finally diagnosed the problem. They're kind of puckering in and blackened where they've puckered in on the leaf and on the flower. And I've determined that it's cyclamen mite, a mite that you cannot see. But I cannot find a miticide that will get rid of that. Do you know of a miticide available that can get rid of cyclamen mite?
I need to page through. I brought a little bit off the top of my head. I don't, but I did bring some resources along, and I was just going to quick look and see what we have as part of UW Extension. We do have what we call our garden facts sheets, which you can actually find yourself if you go to the University of Wisconsin Plant Pathology website and look under Garden Facts. And there's one in there called Home, well, this is vegetables, though, I guess so. But nonetheless, I was just looking to see if they had any specifics on miticides, and unfortunately, I'm not finding
that. Anything right
no,
at the moment.
No, right.
Something may turn up, though, so stay listening. We may well be able to find something before the show's over. And thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. You're listening to Garden Talk today. We're broadcasting live from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association event. It's the fair, the energy fair, brings in people from all over the country and frankly, even from outside the country to look at all of the different workshops and exhibits and live demonstrations and entertainment and organic cafes and everything here and having a lot of fun doing it. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we broadcast this edition of Garden Talk from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. My guest, Ken Schrader, Portage County Ag Agent. Great to have him with us. And, of course, thank you for listening in today. The Midwest Renewable Energy Fair folks, want to thank them for hosting us here. Certainly Rick Ryer and Jay Ritger from our Wisconsin Public Radio Wausau Bureau, our on-site engineer, Dick Madaus, Jennifer Dargan, Dave Potratz, handling production in Madison, and, of course, Judith Sears Poisson, who is always with us and always a big smile on her face, too. We've got the new Wisconsin Public Radio T-shirt. She is sporting it today. You can, so's Rick. They're cool T-shirts. You'll have a chance, I'm sure, at some point to buy one. We have lots of questions for Ken here, and I'm really glad to see so much great participation. I think Jeannie in Big Flats is probably up next. So let's go to Jeannie. Hi, Jeannie. Thank you for waiting.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Nice show. I have a forsythia bush that gets beautiful, green, and lush, but it never blooms. I don't know why. I don't know what I can do. I do have it planted right next to a lilac bush, so I'm not sure if that's the problem. And I'll take my answer off the line.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Well, maybe it would have been better if you hadn't left, because I was going to ask you where you live. Sometimes when we have forsythia that don't bloom, it's a matter of the shrub is hardier than the blossoms on that plant. So because it blooms so early, they're a little bit more sensitive to frost damage. So one possibility was that it just got too cold. And I don't know if you maybe noticed if the lower part of it had a couple of blooms on. You didn't mention that, so that's probably not the case. But occasionally you'll see forsythia where the lower part has blooms on, and the upper part just doesn't have any and gets the green leaves. And that's, again, that differentiation between or difference between hardiness of the flower buds versus hardiness of the plant itself. The other thing to consider, as we've had the conversation with the iris, is the possibility of, depending on what you're using for fertilizer, that you're hitting it a little bit strong on the nitrogen and not enough on the phosphorus and potassium.
Thanks very much for that question. Appreciate it. And Wayne in Green Bay has been waiting a bit, too, and has a question for you, Ken. So let's go there. Wayne, hi.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Yes. I'd like to move some daffodils and tulip bulbs to another area of my garden. But I know I could do it in the fall, but I'm wondering if I could do it sooner.
Well, definitely wait until they've senesced, you know, because the leaves on there, you know, they're the energy source, and wait until they turn yellow and start to fall off. And then you could, if you're so inclined, dig them up and move them. The other option is to just pull them out and keep them in the garage somewhere where they're not going to get overheated or get too dried out, and then transplant them again in the fall. But wait for them to senesce. I mean, we have had occasion where in ornamental gardens where they want to change out. You know, you go from the seasons to spring flowering bulbs to now we got to get to the annuals and get those in, so they'll dig them up. Even, you know, just as they're done blooming, and dig them up and then sell them or give them away. And then in that case, you need to put them in the ground right away to so they get water and can continue the process of going dormant basically for the summer.
There you go, Wayne. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's try Mike in Manitowoc next. Mike, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Two quick questions. One is about mulching a vegetable garden. Is using grass clippings a good idea or not? And the second one is about a rain garden. I've got a sort of a spongy area in my yard. Instead of trying to regrade it, I just want to turn it into a rain garden. But right now it's just wet sod. I'm wondering what I should do to start that process.
Okay, long grass is a mulch.
Okay, just a word of caution on using the lawn grass as a mulch. If you're using a weed and feed product, I would recommend against it because of the potential for carryover of that herbicide from on the foliage. So, otherwise not.
No. Otherwise it's good.
Otherwise it's just fine, right? Go for it. As far as
rain garden,
starting that rain garden, and there are some, talk to your extension agent, and they might be able to get a hold of you, a flyer that we have, a how-to manual for homeowners on rain gardens. You could possibly also locate that on our extension publication website. I'm sure that's been mentioned before, the Learning Store. Check out the Learning Store. Just type in Learning Store on the internet and do a search. It'll pop up. We have all of our majority of our publications are online there that you can view and or print out. So I would suggest contacting your extension agent in Manitowoc,
or just go online and grab copies of those rain garden publications, because they are good, and you will get step by step information in those publications, and they're either free or, well, they're free if you just look at them online.
Right. And that's a good alternative to, you know, I mean, you got a wet spot and don't know what to do with it. Think about putting the wet plants in there, and then if you can have it as a water collection site in your yard, that's even better, rather than having that water run off into the, if you're in town, into the streets and into the drainage system.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll turn to Hayward next and talk with Sally. Sally, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you so much. I have a butterfly garden with three beautiful Baptisia, and this year at the base of one of them, there's an enormous anthill that keeps growing and growing, and I'm wondering, is it going to harm the plant? Do I need to try to get rid of the ants?
Yeah, ants. I'm sure
you just spent a lot of time talking about ants on the show with Phil Pelletieri on Wednesday, as a matter of fact. But Ken, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ants are, again, this morning we had a horticulture update conversation with the university specialists, and ants and ticks are still on the list. So as far as your question, will it, in the end, harm that Baptisia you got growing there? There is that potential. If that anthill keeps growing and getting larger, you know, they're going to just take over the space, and your Baptisia is going to struggle for root surface area and trying to get water and nutrients. So I would suggest two options, either move the Baptisia or try to get rid of the ants. So if you choose to get rid of the ants, you can, first of all, you know, you can get ant baits, and they're not really that effective, because you really, what you need to do is get rid of that, the queen at the bottom of that hill somewhere. So, we usually recommend that you poke holes in the hill and then pour insecticide down in there. Two insecticides you could look for, permethrin or 7, can be pretty effective at dealing with anthills.
And those rods have to be deep. I mean, you just can't, you don't want to put them down a couple inches. You want to go down as deep as you possibly can.
Right. You want to push them down there and see. Usually if the anthill is, you know, has been pretty active, it'll go down fairly easy, and all of a sudden you'll hit a hard spot. And so, especially if you're on a little more clay soil, but my guess is, maybe you're a little bit more sandy is why you got more ant problems.
Yep, probably. Sally, thank you. Appreciate the call. And let's turn to Judy next, who's calling from Stevens Point, not far from here. Judy, hi.
Hey. Hi, Larry. I'm sorry I'm not at your show, but I got scared off by the weather.
Ah, okay. Well, that's fine. We have some hardy souls here. And they seem to be enjoying themselves. The rain stopped. It's okay. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm telling you, I want to warn young gardeners against planting invasives. I did not plant the buckthorn, but I had my entire yard filled with buckthorn trees. I didn't know what it was, and it was providing some kind of a shield for me between neighbors. I live right in the middle of the city. Well, now I just have to keep beating that back. I planted bittersweet, which is now growing 4 inches a day with all the rain. I can't get rid of the bittersweet. But my main concern right now is Dame's Rocket. I planted 4 plants 5 years ago, and it has taken over the entire back of my yard. It is absolutely beautiful, and it smells good, and everybody wants some. And I know it's on the invasive species list, but I don't know that it's illegal. And some of these people that are requesting the seed heads from the Dame's Rocket live where they have hillsides. They would love their hillside covered with it. So I don't know exactly what to do. I went to the DNR invasive species website, and it would not download which plants were illegal. But I have to say the Dame's Rocket is definitely one of the most invasive that I have going on. Hmm. So I'm wondering if
a
you're...
A comment? Yeah.
If you're, yes,
wondering if Ken's got a comment. Yeah. Thanks, Judy. Ken, what do you got?
Yeah, good point, Judy. Really need to pay attention to what kind of things we're putting in our yard. And in some cases, we don't know whether they're going to be invasive or not, but there is a good list on the DNR website, the invasive species website, that can let you know in advance. And as you're discovered, once you get them in the yard, it can be a challenge to control. And so in the case of your Dame's Rocket, of course, the first step would be to keep it from flowering, cut it back so we're not producing more seed. And then from there, it depends on what your can you pull them, depending on how big a population you have, to what extent do you want to go to get rid of them, pulling them, just covering them up with a tarp to basically starve them kill them that way. And then the next step, if you're so inclined, we can look at herbicides to take them out as well, selective herbicides or the glyphosate product, where we're going to basically
kill
most of everything in the area. If it's growing up in grass, it's going to take the grass out as well. So just a couple of options there. Yeah, the best would be to dig them or pull them out. If they're too numerous for that, then you need to consider some of the other options.
And thanks a lot for calling, Judy. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Ken Schrader, Portage County Agricultural Extension Agent, broadcasting today from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair. Having a great time here. A nice group of people have come by to actually watch. They probably all got wet rear ends right now because the chairs are a little bit wet that they're sitting on. Oh, a few of them brought their own seat cushions, so they're not wet. Oh, gosh. Great to have them along. And by the way, if any of you have a question from the audience, please feel free to raise your hand. Judith will be right with you. And in fact, let's take a call, okay, or a question, I'm sorry, from the audience.
Okay, thanks for taking my question. We have a pine woods near here, and in the center of it, we've been clearing a garden spot for about 8 years. Very dry, lots of mulch, lots of watering. Now, all of a sudden this year, in the areas that there's some sun filtering in, there are ferns popping up all over the place. So then my question is, can I just move those ferns around? And then if I do, how can I be sure that they'll come back when we go back to the drought, you know, next year maybe?
Something like that. That's a good question.
But they weren't there before. There's loads of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not unusual that, you know, you start clearing a space out and things start to pop up that you didn't know were there because of the competition from the trees up above, in your case, the all the pines. And my guess is, though, that might have been a pine plantation versus naturally grown pines. I don't know that.
They're spread all over. It looks like weeds, wild. There's, you know, thousands of them.
They're not in any rows or anything like that?
No.
No,
no.
Okay, all right.
So they may have been at one time, but then they were let go, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. So as far as moving the ferns, what do you got to lose to try, I guess, if you're going to want to do something else with the area? Most importantly, pay attention to water. As you said, it's a drier site, so that can be a challenge in itself. And the other thing is that... They're developing in this kind of unique ecosystem, and so I won't guarantee success, but like I said, what have you got to lose? Give it a try and move them a little bit so they're out of the way and water them and go for it. Ferns are a great addition to the landscape. I really like them myself. We have several of them around our property that they're just great.
Thanks for that question. Here's another question from the audience. Your name, sir?
My name's Peter. I'm from Madison, Wisconsin.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
I have a garden about 60 by 30, and it was sandy clay soil, a real mess to work in, especially when it was wet, and it wasn't very fertile. So I built it up with about 3 feet of leaves, mostly maple, and now my... plants that are started are coming off really great. They're working fine. And I added a slow-release fertilizer, thinking that would make up for the decomposition that was going on. But the seedlings, the seeds that I've planted, are not germinating real well. Or when they germinate, they come up spindly and fall over and disappear. And I don't know if they're being eaten by earwigs or if I need some more nutrients. I know I'm supposed to have layered this with compost, but at this point, what do you think I need to add?
Well, when did you put those leaves down last fall?
2 years ago.
2 years ago, okay.
Oh, that's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, it's beautiful underneath. It's black, it's rich, it's crawling with worms. I thought I'd be off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what are we looking at as far as moisture, is it staying a little bit too wet? You know, with all the rains we're having, you could have root rot or damping off problems with those seedlings is one possibility.
Okay. Yeah, that could be a problem. I did create a clay bank to hold back the leaves, but the top 4 inches seems very nice and aerated. But you're thinking maybe I need to let it dry out, divert the water away from there?
I would definitely, you know, feel that soil and see what it's like. If it's mushy and, you know, then the odds are it's a little too wet. On the other end of the spectrum, with that much organic matter, is it wet enough? You know, you need to do that and go out there and feel the soil and make that judgment.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot.
You're
for
welcome.
That question. And if anybody else in the audience has a question, well, Judith will be right there with her microphone. In the meantime, we have Pat, who posted on my Facebook page and says she has a mum that has brown spots on the leaves. Looks like something is eating the leaves. What do we do about that? Brown spots? Obviously, that's not from the eating.
No. Brown spots, not too surprising with the weather we've been having. When you have that cool, wet weather, lack of sunshine, we are hearing about leaf diseases. It's perfect environment for those things to occur. So I guess hope for more sunshine. It's about what you can do. I mean, depending on how extensive you want to get. One other option would be to take a sample to your local extension office, have them take a look at it. And the other thing is, if you're even considering fungicides, there are some out there that could be used as well.
Let's turn back to the telephones for a bit here. Terry in Wood County, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. I just had a suggestion for the miticide question. Hi, Ken. What I use for a miticide is actually any of the products that contain neem oil as their active ingredient. Insecticides don't work on mites, but the neem oil is labeled as an insecticide, a fungicide, and a miticide, so it would work on mites.
Aha. Yeah. Thank you.
By the way, Terry is the Wood County horticulture agent, so thank you very much, Terry, for helping me out.
Stay listening, Terry. We may need more help. You never know. No, thanks a lot for calling. I really appreciate it. And so, Terry, the Wood County Horn Agent. Lucille in Green Bay, let's turn to you next. Hi, Lucille.
Hi. How are you? I have an old wives recipe for getting rid of ants. Take either farina or cream of wheat and spread it over the hill. And the ants eat it, and they die, so therefore they can't take any food down to the main ant. And the whole hill goes away in no time at all. I used it on fire ants and got rid of them.
Cream of wheat. Now, that is one I have not heard. And I've heard a lot of suggestions. Why would cream of wheat create a problem for the ants?
And I'm not an entomologist, so I'm going to have to punt on that one. Larry, I don't know.
Phil Pelletieri about that.
Yeah, that would be a great opportunity. But if it's working, that's...
If it's working, it's not going to hurt anything. That's, a little cream of wheat in the ground is not going to hurt a thing.
No, so. That's right. Does it take a whole box?
No, just kind of sprinkle it over the nest.
Sprinkle it around?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the ants eat it, and they explode, they die. So therefore, they can't feed their mother ant, so their mother ant can't reproduce.
Yeah, right. Well, interesting.
Well, I thank you very much for calling with that suggestion, Lucille. It's certainly not going to hurt anything to give it a try, that's for sure. You can call in with your question or with your suggestions at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We have actually a few callers online. Yeah, let's go to Ray in West Bend. Hi, Ray. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen. Wonderful show again. Can I have a question regarding plum trees? We have a couple of plum trees that they blossom every year, wonderful, full. Over the next couple of weeks, the blossoms fall off, which is normal, I suppose, to a certain degree, because there's just so many of them. But then things start drying out. The blossoms are gone. You can see the small fruits on there. But by this time, let's say month and a half later, we only have two or three plums. And they never finish growing. Hmm. And I sometimes see these crystals, small crystals forming on the fruit, but it never mature. The fruit never mature.
So what do you think, Ken? Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I guess first thoughts, yeah, it's not unusual to have, if it's super full of blossoms, that you'll have some that aren't going to be productive. I mean, the plant can only support so much, but when you're getting down to only a few fruit in the end,
that's not good.
No. And you may want to consider looking at the fertility in the area, get some soil samples and see where you're at on that end of things. Do you have the trees mulched so that they're getting adequate water and keeping the roots cool? Anything you can do to keep that those trees healthy and happy is going to improve on your fruit production.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Ray. We're talking, this is Garden Talk. We're broadcasting from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair. It's going on this entire weekend at the MRE grounds near Custer, Wisconsin. Wonderful opportunity for all of us, as a matter of fact, for you and for me, to learn a lot more about what's going on, what's the latest in terms of solar, for example, or wind power. Lots of speakers, lots of great music, lots of great food. So, and it runs today, tomorrow, and Sunday through 4 o'clock, I think, on Sunday is the last. That's the close. But there's a lot going on, and I hope you have a chance to see it. And, of course, join in with your questions and comments right here at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller with my guest Ken Schrader today, Portage County Agricultural Agent for UW Extension. Great to have him along as we broadcast from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair with a nice audience out in front of us here who have braved the wet weather. And it's not too bad, really. Now it's just a little breezy, and I don't see any, no one is blown away yet. They seem to be pretty well anchored to their chairs. And here's somebody standing with a question. So let's go there. Hi.
Hi, Larry and Ken. Yeah, the company that I work for, Power Test, has set aside a quarter of an acre in the back for its employees to grow vegetables and any extra we give to charity. And I was thinking, you know, our company goes through about, I figured it out, about 400 pounds worth of coffee grounds.
Oh.
And I was been on the internet, and it's kind of controversial as to whether it's helpful or not, and I just wanted your opinion, Ken.
Well, first of all, I'd like to really compliment your company on doing this.
That's great.
You know, producing vegetables and providing the extras for the needy, that's a great undertaking. As far as all those coffee grounds, you can put them out there. Don't get them too thick, and I really don't have a specific rate to put them on, but if you put them out there and spread them in, I mean, they can be advantageous to the soil.
Yeah. I guess it would be better if they were composted first, or can we just throw them right on raw? I mean, after they've been brewed.
Right, yeah. Yeah, don't put them out there too hot, of course. And and again, if you put them out there thin enough, yeah, it doesn't matter. Or you put them on in fall after the garden's been harvested if you're storing them somewhere. But otherwise, yeah, put them in the compost heap if you got a place where you're composting and stir them in, and that would be just great.
Yeah. Great idea. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll take some more calls from our more questions from our audience. But first, let's go back to the phones and talk with Lucy in Appleton. Lucy, hi.
Good morning, Larry and Ken. So good to hear all of the questions and answers. My call is about row gardening versus square foot gardening or raised beds. I just finished planting a large vegetable garden, which I've done for many years. And since I looked at Mel Bartholomew's book just this morning, now I'm thinking, should I change? And then I have one other question. In this big garden that we have, what do you recommend for best practices for weed control in row gardening?
Okay, Great subject. Appreciate that conversation. You know, over the last 4 years, I think it is now, we've been doing what I refer to as vegetable garden walks here in Portage County, where we would invite the public to come and visit private gardens and learn about what they're doing for their vegetable gardening. And we had a whole variety from the conventional gardening where you've got the wide rows and you get the tiller in there and basically farming the soil, too. We've had the raised beds and the square foot gardening as well. So good subject. The reason you want to go, if you want to go away from the row gardening, obviously is space needed, because you got to get through there and till. So you're using a lot more square footage for growing those vegetables. And then as your thoughts are there, you know, you got to deal with the weeds. Best way to deal with the weeds would be to put down a good mulch. Put it mulch in between the rows. That's going to help keep the soil cooler, keep the moisture in, and keep the weeds down. So that would be my recommendation for that. And that, as you have read the Square Foot Gardening book, and there are others out there as well, that's the whole point. You're using less area to grow the vegetables that you can grow, you know, much more condensed. Raised beds can be advantageous as far as if your soil isn't that good and you got a lot of weeds, you can put in there a mixture of compost and potting soil, and that'll solve your weed problem as well, because you're not dealing with the native weed populations.
And I've got friends who listen to the program regularly and tried it out last year, the square foot gardening, and really had immediately great success and are expanding their operations this year. I don't know. Have you done any experimenting with straw bale gardening? I've got one straw bale. I'm experimenting this year. Judith's got five. Some of our audience have five out in the audience there. Well.
So explain to the audience what you're doing with your straw bales.
Well, you take that straw, you get your straw bales, and you season the straw bales to begin with. You put a little fertilizer, and you water those bales every day, soak them down every day for about 10 days. And what happens is you start getting, and you're adding a little fertilizer as you go along, and what happens is you're starting to get breakdown inside of the straw, and you get... A little heat going in there, and then you can plant your plants right into the bale. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. Judith, you got something to report on it.
One thing, so far my results are, they're not going crazy yet, but hopefully with a little sun, the plants will really take off. But the thing that I like about it is that you can actually plant on three surfaces. So mm-hmm. there's what you're putting in on the top, but now I've got squash and melons around the sides of the straw bales because they're going to trail off anyway. So, again, making use of a small amount of space. So, fingers crossed, I'll have good squash and melon reports towards the end of the summer.
And somebody, who was it that was talking about planting potatoes and planted potatoes in theirs and got wonderful potatoes out of it and then didn't have, I mean, they were clean. Mm-hmm. I mean, they came out of the straw, so they were clean. And we're really, really happy with it. So that's another, Lucy, if you're experimenting, you might want to give that a try too. What the heck? Thanks a lot for calling, by the way. Appreciate your call. Ben in Ogdensburg, what about you? Hi.
Yeah, my family owns a small tree farm, and we've got a problem with prickly ash and buckthorn are the two.
Oh.
Primary problem species that we have, and I was just trying to get a good recommendation for large scale eradication. I mean, it's in and amongst around the edges of a lot of the woodlots and stuff is where it seems to start and then proliferates from there. But there's some areas, open areas, where we'd like to clear out and plant actual, you know, trees in there of some sort, some valuable timber going. So any recommendations would be much appreciated.
Well, Ben, so are they smaller trees, seedlings, basically the challenge, or have you got some larger ones there as well?
There's definitely a mixture. We've got some
probably some of the largest prickly ash in the state. I don't know, there's some that are up 3 or 4 inches in diameter, but most of them are probably in your smaller, no more than an inch and a half or 2 inches in diameter.
Sure. So I think you're going to be looking at some chainsaw pruning on some of those larger ones, unless you've got a bulldozer you can push them over with. But you're going to need to get those big ones out of there so that they're not providing seed for all those seedlings you're seeing. As far as dealing with the seedlings, one option is to use a brush killer on them, take them out. Otherwise, you know, you can pull them. That's option number two. And if you're not against that, you know, using an herbicide that's just going to take it all out, that's fine if you want to replant. But if you want to keep the grass in there, you need to pay attention to that as well. But first and foremost, get them big ones out of there because, again, when they, you know, they're producing seed and it's just adding to your problem. And then they are going to be persistent on those bigger trees. When you cut them, you really should consider applying a brush control herbicide onto those stumps because it will help prevent the regrowth and the sprouting from the roots. I mean, over time, if you're not inclined to do that, the brush killer side, you can also constantly break those sprouts off. And the more you challenge that root system, over time, the roots will die because that you're not allowing the top growth to photosynthesize and produce nutrients for those roots to survive.
That's a longer process.
It is. That is a several-year process if you're going to starve those roots out because they have stored a lot of carbohydrates and are very capable of pushing up new shoots.
Yep, for sure. Ben, thank you. Appreciate the call. John sent us a note on my Facebook page. A friend told me he used Milorganite to break clay soil. Is this a good way to do this, or would you suggest, or what would you suggest as the best way to turn clay soil into good garden soil?
Yeah, and that's not an issue I have to deal with here, where no. My backyard garden is the sand and the other side of things. But it all comes down to the best solution to amending the soil is using compost, or in that matter, you know, I mean, that's organic matter adding that Milorganite, so... all depends on how fast you want to change it over. Put a couple several bags and inches of compost on that soil is going to do a lot for you.
And let's take a call from Roger in Lone Rock. Roger, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Going back, I missed the beginning of the guy who was talking about having a lasagna or deep mulch garden, but I did hear that he said his seedlings were growing fast and tall and then dying. And typically... seedlings do not need a lot of nitrogen or fertilizer to start with. And when you plant seedlings in the deep mulch or lasagna garden, you need to put a little bit of some kind of soil or soil-like material in there to give them a little good soil-to-seed contact to get started. I don't know if he was using something with much fertilizer in it, but the two things that usually cause seedlings to grow fast would either be that there's too much readily available nitrogen for them right where they're starting to grow, or that it's partially shaded and they're stretching.
Good points, Ken. I think, Roger's right on target there.
Yeah, he's definitely covered that, and good points to bring up there, exactly.
Thanks a lot, Roger. Appreciate your call. And we have Lynn in Richfield. Hi. You have a quick question. Lynn, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes.
Yes, my asparagus bed this year got invaded by violets. And I didn't end up with a whole lot of asparagus. I got mostly spindles. So now it's going to seed, and I'm wondering what to do about that. So I'm sure it's just going to get worse.
Are very difficult to get rid of.
Yeah, that's an interesting challenge. You know, if you were had the grasses, we could provide some options there to where you could take the grass out prior to the asparagus coming up. But my best recommendation is going to be to pull them out. And if your bed is pretty large, that's going to take you some time. The other option is you could potentially restart, dig up the asparagus and start over. I don't have a good herbicide recommendation for you. I recommend just removing them by hand.
Yeah. And frankly, you know, most asparagus gardens aren't, you know, if it's just a sort of a backyard, at least ours wasn't very big, and an hour or so pulling, you can get a lot done, even though it looks like you're never going to get it all done. You can do it. Yeah. I guarantee you, Lynn, you can do it if you keep at it. Yeah. We are talking today and having a great time with Ken Schrader, associate professor and Portage County Agricultural Agent for UW Extension. And we're broadcasting today, Rhonda Fanning answering phones, by the way, and thanks to Rhonda, from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair going on in Custer, Wisconsin this weekend, having a lot of fun with them. And certainly thank you for listening, and stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're broadcasting today from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair near Custer, Wisconsin. I tell you, we're having a great time here at the fair. Come on out. You'll have a chance to see some of just the latest in solar technology and wind technology and a whole lot more. Ken Schrader, associate professor and Portage County Agricultural Agent for UW Extension, our guest to answer your gardening questions. It could be vegetables. It might be flowers. We've taken a crack at some insects and questions. But tell you what, you got a question? Give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And certainly we'd love to hear from you. We did have a Facebook comment from Pat, who says, I control Dame's Rocket in my wildflowers by cutting off the seed heads after they flower. I leave some each year. I only wish Queen Anne's Lace were as easy to control that way. Well, get the seeds out.
Right. That's going to keep the population from expanding by keeping those seeds down.
We have Lynn in Two Rivers with a question for you. Hi, Lynn. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hi, Ken. Thank you. Hi, probably Lynn. Am going to be asking another question that someone else has asked, but I have a problem. I actually have a wellness center, so I don't promote anything very toxic for the ground or teaching people how to build their gardens. And I still have a problem trying to get rid of weeds and grass amongst all my other flowers and flower beds, and I don't know how to kill them off other than pulling them out by hand. Do you have a natural remedy of any sort?
I think that's the most natural you can get is getting out there and pulling them out, short of trying to smother them, which may work and it may not. Of course, you've got to have that. The plants that you got growing there need water and sunlight as well, so that gets to be a challenge. The best bet, you know, I guess if you start clean, then you're a lot better off. So maybe you want to start some of the planting beds and start over where you can clean them up before you get started. I mean, if it's the annual weeds, they're going to come in and you're just going to have to pull them out. The perennial weeds, that's the story where if you can start clean is going to help you out a lot. So you come down to that, either you pull, you dig out, and like you said, you're not a fan of going to the chemical control, so we'll stay away from there. Roundup works pretty well as far as spot treating on things, if it comes down to that.
And thanks, Lynn, for calling. Appreciate it. We have a question from our audience here at the Energy Fair. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I'm Tom, and I live in Stevens Point. And rhubarb question.
Okay.
So every spring, rhubarb is like the first thing out of the ground. And it seems like almost as soon as the leaves are out and ready to pick the stems, the seed heads come up. And we always think, well, you know, cut the seed heads off and maybe it'll keep, you know, you'll get more leaves or make it last longer. But I have really nothing to base that on. So any opinions about cutting seed heads off of rhubarb? And can you cut too much off and kill the plant? I've never seen rhubarb killed.
Yeah, it's pretty hardy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. You know, trying to prevent it from producing seed, it's all about energy use in the plant. And when that plant starts producing flowers and then the next step is the seeds, you're taking energy from the roots and from the leaves and then it starts focusing more on flower and seed production versus leaf production. So if you can kind of delay that, in the end, it's kind of hard to keep it from blooming down the road. But it can improve your leaf production by backing off on the flowering.
Is there such a thing as, you know, like if you keep cutting the seeds heads off, can that hurt the plant?
I would speculate not. I won't guarantee that, but, you know, I've dealt with a lot of rhubarb in my day, and I haven't had any problems with it, so.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much for that question. And any other questions from the audience, we'll be glad to take them. In the meantime, let's go back to the phones and to Joe in Appleton. Joe, hello.
Hello, I have feedback actually about your loosening up clay soil and also good advice that was missed in the last question about rhubarb.
Okay.
First off, the rhubarb, it's important to remember to pull the rhubarb when you pull it and the seed stalks also instead of cut them.
Yes.
Because if you cut them, it leaves organic material there to decompose, which will tell the plant to start slowing down because it's not being used.
Correct.
And that's the theory why, but yes, by practice, I've watched it work. And then loosening up clay soil, a really cheap way of doing it and getting a lot of material to amend your soil with is take all of your leaves, your neighbor's leaves, when they're dry and brown, chop them up with your lawnmower, use a rear tiller, and put them in your garden in the fall. If you chop them up nice and give them a month of getting them wet, having them wet in your garden before winter, they work pretty well. Also, you can segregate one quarter of your garden just for that so that you can do it all year round and throw stuff in there. Of course, not much fleshy vegetables, but some grass cutting, some browns and greens, and then mix it up with the soil and add soil. And within 2 years, you'll have 8 to 12 inches of loose black dirt.
Good suggestions. One of the things, Ken, you know, you want to be a little careful about the tree leaves that you select, depending on what leaves. There are some trees that aren't so good for production. They'll actually inhibit production of vegetables. So,
Well, the biggest thing there would be if you allow them to compost a little bit, they'll be fine. Doesn't matter the type of leaf that they are. Well,
was the one I was thinking about.
There you go. You should have come out right away and says, "Well, what about black walnut leaves?" There, I would. You're right on, Larry. Don't be putting black walnut leaves or butternut, you know, the leaves on your garden because they do have growth inhibitors that will be a big challenge to you. It's a good point, really.
But otherwise,
the leaves are good. They make decompose and really add a lot to the soil. So great suggestion there.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. And let's go to Johnny in Wisconsin Dells next. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm Johnny from Wisconsin Dells, and I was I got another question about the rhubarb that everybody was talking about. And
yeah,
what the problem is that a friend of mine just gave me some this year. So I put them in the ground, and the leaves are great, but they are browning, close to the ones that's close to the ground. And I think something is eating on them, or something is happening because they're browning close to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Are the rest of the leaves looking okay? Just the leaves right next to the ground?
just next to the ground, but the top one looks great.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't be too concerned about that, unless, of course, you're seeing some chewing or insects on there, then you might want to take a closer look at that. Question, how deep did you plant them? If you planted too deep, we may see some problems also with those lower leaves.
I didn't plant them. Okay, what happened? He gave me the roots to them. So what I did, I planted the earth a hole deep enough to put the roots, so it can stretch the roots out so they'll go to the bottom of the hole. But the leaves, the top, I got it right level with the ground.
Okay.
Okay. And if this was just the year that you transplanted them, I wouldn't be too concerned unless, like I said, if you are finding some significant chewing on the leaves. But if the new growth is looking good, I think you'll be okay. It takes those plants a little bit of time to adjust to their new situation and really establish. The other caution I would say is I'd caution you against harvesting too much of that crop this year while it's establishing.
Yeah, that's a very good point as well. Johnny, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. We have more callers online. You can join us, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. I'm going to turn to Wisconsin Rapids next, and let's talk to Todd. Todd, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
Yes, hello? What's on your mind?
I've had an infestation of grubs, and it's the white grubs that feed on the root structure of the grass, and I have tried Grub Be Gone. Last fall, I had about 15 robins that were actually furrowing up the grass to get to the grubs, and I can't seem to get a handle on them.
And I wasn't going to have much else to provide to that other than using grub control herbicides.
I'm not sure what causes that problem. That's something we may want to save for Phil.
Yeah, I think that would be good to run that by Phil. There are a variety of beetles that, in the end, that's their larval stage is the grubs in the grass. Have you seen a lot of Japanese beetles or June beetles or in the past? You're gonna see these as beetles at some point.
I haven't seen these. They're up to about, the biggest ones are an inch and a half, inch and three quarters. They're white. They look like a big maggot. And there's, you find them about 2 inches underneath the grass in the back. Yeah.
And they're chewing up the grass and making it turn brown when it gets dry, right?
You know, with the fertilizing and keeping up with underground water system, you can't really see the browning of the grass, but I can go almost anywhere in the backyard and lift up some soil and see dozens of them. And I just wondered if there's something more natural I could apply, because I try to avoid herbicides and insecticides, but...
Right, and off the top of my head, I don't have that solution for you. As Larry suggested, maybe he can run that by Phil Pelletieri, or, I mean, you could email your local extension agent and they could get you an answer sooner than later on that, too.
You can shoot me an email, too, and I can forward it on to Phil and get you an answer pretty quickly, actually. He was just on the show a couple days ago, so... We'll see what we can do. Shoot me an email. It's at miller@wisc.edu, miller@wisc.edu. Barbara in Jacksonport, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a cottage in Jacksonport on Lake Michigan. Every couple of years, we seem to get an algae, and I think it's Chlordophora. And it will go across our entire property, which is about 110 feet wide. Sometimes will be 6, 7, 8 feet wide and maybe 2 or 3 feet deep. And when the sun comes out, it dries into a hard lump. Sometimes the water will wash it, soften it, and take it away. And other years, like this year, it is just moving from one side of the property to the other. Is there anything we can use to get rid of that, or a way of disposing of that. I think we're not supposed to bring motorized vehicles on the beach to get rid of that. Do you have any suggestions?
So it's just in your in the water area,
the water's edge and onto the beach.
Yeah, it extends up onto the beach there. Yeah. Short of raking it and pulling it off, and you know, it would make a good compost for other places in the landscape, really. Otherwise, it's, you know, given the cooler wet weather that we're having, I'm sure that probably makes it a little bit more prolific. There are herbicides out there that you could potentially check into using that if you're so inclined.
I have some friends who have a property on Lake Michigan, and they pull. And it's a little bit of work, but, you know, they actually, on either side of them, the people don't do it. Their area of the beach is just perfect. And it's easy, once you get it cleaned up the first time, and if you keep at it, then it's not so hard. It's the problem is we just let it get away is the from you. That's the real problem. So good luck, Barbara. Thank you very much for calling. Mary in Greendale. We'll turn to you next. Hi.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call at night or this afternoon. It may be off topic, but when you were talking about the rhubarbs, I planted some strawberry plants, and my son-in-law added dirt, and he covered the plants maybe about 2 to 3 inches. And will they ever come up through that dirt or not?
I might recommend you go back and try to find them back.
Yeah, that's a bad...
It depends. If they were, how long they've been covered, they may not be looking so good because they're not seeing the light of day and can't photosynthesize. There's potential there for rot. So I would suggest you kind of gently pull the soil away and see what you got.
Yeah. And otherwise, you're not going to be happy with the result. You may not be happy anyway with the result, but I would. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, those crowns, it's not good to cover the crowns.
Mary, thank you. Sue in Mequon, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for the show. I'm learning a lot. And I have a question about Lily of the Valley. That should be illegal. Underneath grouping of river birch, I'm trying to eradicate them. I'm afraid to use the herbicides because of the feeder roots on the birches. Are there any other options other than digging because they're so deep, their root system, the Lily of the Valley, is so deep? Thank you.
Yeah, cover them. Cover the soil, you know, but it could be one start, you know. They do smell so great. I remember back when my girls were young, we had Lily of the Valley growing along the house, and they were starting to bloom and looking great, and all of a sudden, one day we come home, and where are all the flowers? We get up in the house and find out that they had picked every one of the lilies of the valley. So, I mean, I have great memories of that plant. But you're right, it does, when it's got the right growing conditions, it does like to spread and exist. So I'm curious as to, option is to again, cover it, kind of smother it. Eventually it's going to die out because it's not getting the sunshine. You have to be careful that the birch tree is still getting enough water, though.
Yep. Thanks for that question. Appreciate it. And Tom in Green Bay, hello. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call.
Hi, good afternoon. The question I got is I got a climbing rose, and it's on the south side of my house. It's a fair amount of sunshine, but the problem every year I've got is the rose starts getting, the leaves start turning in spots. It isn't really brown, but they're almost like you can see the green part disappears and it turns kind of almost a brown, clear, whitish brown, and you can see the veins in the leaves. And the question I got is, is that a mosaic virus? Or if it is something else, is there something I put on there because I've got herbs underneath it? I don't want to spray something that's toxic.
And it's hard to diagnose without seeing it. I mean, it could potentially be a virus if it's kind of a random, odd sort of lines in it. The other thing could be a leaf miner chewing on it and taking out the green part of the leaf. So, and in the case of if it is a virus, then you haven't much option with it other than taking it out. I would really suggest you take a sample to the extension office in Green Bay and see what they have to say so they can take a look at it and see what's going on.
Yeah, they'll, if nothing else, they'll send it to Madison and Dr. Death will take a look at it at the plant pathology clinic, at the plant disease diagnostic clinic.
No, you have a good horticulture agent in Brown County, VJ.
So. Yeah, VJ will do. Will probably have a quick answer for you. Thank you so much. Boy, this has been a lot of fun. Ken, you know, the time, how fast the time goes. And here we've got Portage County. I wanted to mention that Farm Technology Day is coming to Portage County in 2014.
Yeah, it's an exciting event. And the neat part is that it's just east of Plover Stevens Point, just outside of the Crossroad Commons shopping center there. August 12 through 14 of 2014. If you're interested in agriculture, you don't even have to be involved in agriculture. It's an opportunity to learn a lot more about agriculture. It's a huge event, and we have roughly about 600 exhibitors that come in and show their wares. And again, it has everything from for the small farmer to the large farmer. And we've got family living tent and youth tents activities. So it's not only the big farmer opportunity here.
Not at all. And I don't imagine you'll be doing anything connected with it.
No. I have nothing to do with it. No.
He'll have blackened eyes by the time he's
actually
done.
I serve as the executive secretary, and we've been planning this for several years now as an event that large takes a lot of planning. So.
Ken, thank you so much. Appreciate it very much. Ken Schrader, Portage County Agriculture Agent, and a big thanks to Ken and to the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, Rick Ryer and Jay Ricker from our Wausau Bureau, Dick Madouse, our producer on site, Rhonda Fanning and Dave Potratz handling production in Madison, Judith Sears Poisson, of course, always a great partner with me. Thank you for listening.